Here we are with another Triathlon podcast back again to bring you some insight into the pro racing. Have a little fun, well, chatting about some of the odd and entertaining things going on in triathlon. There have been a few discussions that got a few ruffles or feathers ruffled this week, but we will dive into all of that. Of course, race results and what's going on with the crew. I'm joined as always with Josh and Fede. Let's jump into how things are going in your guys' world. Josh, how are things going?
Things have been busy, hectic, recover-wise, right there where I want to be. I took a couple, actually, extra days last week, just kind of in between races, and then we had the whole marathon weekend of everything going on, and I just kind of felt like I need a reset, and I've got some time before my next race, and felt really good after taking a day or two last week. I think I worked out like 5 days out of the seven, but I actually took a couple days for the first time in a long time. And as we were talking before the show, I got on my bike to ride outside when we finally got some nicer weather this weekend. And then it started raining halfway through the ride, but it was like the best hour and a half ride I've had outside in a long time, and was actually pushing better numbers than I was pushing at Oceanside, and pretty decent climbing. And it's like, wow, this is what a nice pair of fresh legs feels like. And just, I got that love and everything back that you kind of have in that lull after a race. And it felt good to get out, felt good to be training. I actually went and swam 2000 right before we hopped on tonight. So got back in the pool, signed up for a sprint try in about a month, and going to hop in to an event down the road here, actually in Hopkinton, where the marathon starts. So jump in there, did that one last year, and that'll kind of be a nice little warm-up for my next 70.3, which is June 9th. So back at it. We got a nice little build here, and see if I can push some more power going into Western Massachusetts.
Awesome. Sounds like you're definitely getting that recovery in, and that's just it. Like, that mental, physical fatigue of the travel, the event, and then you backed it up with another weekend of events. It's so good that you're actually listening to your body and waiting for that time where you're actually feeling mentally fresh and ready to get after it. So many athletes just try to push right after the race. They're drained. They're not feeling like they don't really want to be doing those sessions and push through anyways. And that is a fast way to burn out in this crazy sport.
Yeah, it was a long winter of work for Oceanside, and it all paid off. But it is important, like you said, to listen to your body, and at the same time, don't just like throw it all out. I was still very good about my nutrition. I was still very good about my hydration and mobility, and did some things around the house and things like that to keep going. And then once I felt like, all right, time to get at it again, it felt good. And that's kind of where you want to be mindset wise. So happy with how everything's going. I'm excited to hear how Fed's doing and seeing if we're going to have another one getting back out there and racing soon. Sounds like he might have found something he wants to jump into.
When's the comeback, Fed?
Hey, guys. Good to be here. So I training has been going okay, I guess. Swimming's been good. When was it? Sunday. So yesterday was my first ever, jog 1 minute, walk 1 minute. And I felt like a golden retriever. I just wanted to sprint for the minute, but I just kept it easy. And after that, I was like, hey, this is my first run in a few weeks. So I'm just going to jump in the recovery boots and do the Theragun and everything. I don't want to injure myself again. But yeah, like Josh mentioned, and I was talking to you guys before the show, there is a TT race, just like a bike race. Thankfully, my bike now is UCI legal, so I won't be needing to do any tweaks there. Maybe just take out the front water bottle cage, and that would be it. But yeah, it's an 8K TT, so that's like a 5 mile TT, like 2 hours from the city. Yeah, like 3 weeks from now. So that might be my first comeback event. So yeah, now I'm just geeking out on all the aero gains I can get, because obviously fitness is not necessarily there right now. but I'm just going to need to be narrow and arrow for that race. And yeah, it's exciting. I mean, I'm happy to be back and training again. Yeah, just taking it one day at a time. And yeah, with a lot of FOMO now that Texas is this weekend. And a buddy of mine called me and he was like, I'm sorry to bring this up. I know you're not racing, so can I just borrow your bike box? And I was like, fine. But yeah.
Rub a little salt to me.
Exactly. Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, fine. You can have it. But yeah, happy to be training again. What about you, Jenna? What's been happening in your world?
Yeah, slowly recovering from the travel and event week and all that fun stuff. I forgot I've got a race this weekend, so just realized that.
Classic. Awesome.
You know what the funniest thing was? You know how I realized it? I got an email about package pickup. And even worse is the package pickup is in my office building. So if I had not gotten that email, there would have been like a bunch of people walking through my office. And I'm like, oh, shit, I'm signed up for that race. So I'm racing a 10K this weekend. My least favorite distance across the board. So that should be fun. I've only done one 10K ever because it's just that super painful threshold plus the whole time. So this will be interesting. So mentally need to prepare for that bit of suffering, but it'll be good to kind of see how the training has been going. Definitely a bit of detraining from the last couple weeks of chaos, but go out there and see what I can do. But what you were talking about, Arrow Fede, I've got a new toy that I'm playing with that I won't mention yet, but I am super excited about. It's, an arrow sensor that you can stick on your bike to see what your CDA is kind of in real time while you're riding. And you can do some at home testing instead of, well, having to spend a few $1,000 to go to a wind tunnel. So you guys all know I'm cheap with a lot of this stuff like nutrition. So being able to test at home is a lot more affordable than the wind tunnel. But now that the weather is kind of warming up here, I'm going to go out there tomorrow and test it out. And I've got, a new bike coming as well. So I'm going to do some comparison testing between my current bike and the new one coming up and just generally geek out on aerodynamics. So I am super stoked for that, but I'll let you guys know more when I actually test it out and have some fun with it. Yeah.
So it seems like there's a lot of like new aero testing being done in all of triathlon right now, and especially with the no bottles down the tri kits and all the different changes. And more I look, the more and more people who are riding with their regular water bottles up front between the arms. And it's interesting now how that's become more and more popular. And even before the regulations, like, oh, maybe they're just doing it on a long ride. I think we've talked about this before, but now you're starting to see like the aero bottle, the regular bottle being set up with an aero like contraption in front of it now too, in the between the arms. And there are different bike setups that are being made for that. So you don't have the straw and the aero bottle and the magnetic system and that profile design type or X-Lab type setup, but it's a precision fuel and hydration bottle, or it's a Morton bottle, or, and just stuff that anyone can throw in. And I actually have been playing around with myself because I know I can get a full liter and I know how much I'm getting nutrition-wise, and it's not going to spill out of the straw and out of the little refill hole and things like that. So
yeah.
I don't know. What are your takes on some of that stuff you guys have been seeing and what are your plans?
That is a great question.
Personally. Yeah. Yeah. With that one, personally, I wouldn't be using the regular bottle because you just have to starting to play with this stuff more. The increase in drag when you're trying to drink from a bottle like that, even down a narrow position, like you're winging out there so that you have to take a sip. That is all just straight into the wind. When we're at the point where people are putting bladders down their jersey to have that kind of CDA hit, doesn't make a ton of sense to me. There's definitely some benefits, like you mentioned, for amateur athletes, like not spilling out through the straw and splashing everywhere, because that definitely is a pain in the butt. being able to fit more in there. So I think if you're doing like a super hot and humid race, like we've seen with a lot of the pros lately, that may be a good thing for it. And then you can also get into some of the insulated water bottles so that it does stay cooler for a little bit longer. So So I could see for that reason doing something like it. But if you're on a flat and fast course and reasonable temperatures, I'd say go aero bottle. You can stay aero while drinking it. And they've just shown with a lot of those BTAs are more aerodynamic than if you're to have anything else. So yeah, I'd be curious to ask if you have the pros that do use those ones.
I think Finella is one of them.
Yep.
Yeah, and you got to wonder if there's some sponsorship stuff in there too, like having to have the branding on there.
True.
Yeah. I know for a fact that a BTA system has little to no aero penalty regarding the bottle. You can have like a regular water bottle or like an aero one, BTA, and shouldn't be a problem. What I think is going to be starting to happen a bit more is, do you guys remember like a couple of years ago, TO back in Kona had two BTA on his, like he had two water bottles. And that, I think now that the Camelback is banned, we're going to start to see more athletes do that, because that also, you know, functions as a way of closing the gap between the chest and the handlebars, the aero bars, and I think that's going to have a huge impact in terms of aerodynamics. But between the arms, there's no aero penalty. You can choose whichever water bottle is better for you and most comfortable. And at the end of the day, usually what's most comfortable is the fastest for you. So just stick with that. That would be my take on that.
Jenna brings up a good point. I think the actual bottle itself is not going to be where you see the loss in CDA. It's when you get up to actually take the drink and lose the aero position. Whereas with the straw system, you aren't really moving too much and potentially if at all. But I guess if you're on a flat course, it definitely would make sense to stick with the aero bottle and the straw as opposed to the regular bottle. Whereas if you're on a climbing course and in utter weather, then maybe you're not going to lose as much if you can find time to drink out of it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's fun. There's so much. It's funny. This is definitely a time where aerodynamics has been in the forefront of everyone's mind more than ever before. I think it's finally starting to reach a point where people realize how much free speed is out there. Like a couple points in your CDA is minutes faster over an Ironman, and that's not being any fitter. Like, and sometimes it's even in a more comfortable position. Like, it is crazy, the benefits. But I'm gonna be geeking out a fair bit on it over the next few weeks. You guys might have to hear quite a few aero updates as I test different positions and equipment and stuff and see what's faster, what's not, and have some fun with that. So super stoked for it. Yeah. Snita, I tried to do an initial test, and one of the things is you have to keep like a fairly steady speed, and you do kind of out and backs to keep the conditions fairly similar. But it was 25 mph winds with 50 mph gusts. So one way was super easy. The other way I was dying. I did it after a hard run, and I was just like, nope, it's just no pain. So we'll have to wait for a calmer day to give that a better test.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's roll into it. Speaking of speed and aerodynamics and all that fun stuff, the pros are definitely spending a lot of time, money, and effort to dial those in. So, Fede, why don't you tell us what's going on in the racing world?
Yeah, so for the first time in like a gazillion years, can you guys hear me?
Hello?
Hello?
Uh-oh.
Hello?
Yep.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Are you guys there?
Well, we may not have some race results.
There's a lot of them too.
We can hear you.
What about now?
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Can you guys see me now?
I have them pulled up.
Okay. Is
hello, hello.
It's crazy how many. Ah, there you are.
Oh, there we go. Can you hear me good now?
Yeah, we can hear you much better.
Ah, perfect.
We can actually hear you.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Awesome. So I was.
Start with Cebu, Valencia, or South Africa?
Well, I wanted to start with South Africa because for the first time in like a gazillion years, we've had a swim that wasn't shortened in Ironman South Africa. So that was good.
Anything is possible.
Yeah. That was very good to see. And, you know, it's an amazing race. And it was so... Finally, we got to see a full Ironman down in South Africa. And, you know, a guy who was a former Kona age group winner turned professional, Rasmus Svenningsen from Sweden. He took the win, the victory, in 8 hours and 3 minutes. And now this just goes to show how tough the conditions were, because 8:01 for a victory now seems to be slow. And it was, you know, he ran a 2:51, but he's an amazing, amazing swim biker. So kudos to Rasmus. Second place from Denmark, Mathias Petersen. And on third place, coming out of, well, not nowhere, but, you know, having from a crazy schedule, Cam Worth. He was bike racing, and then he was like, you know what? I'm just going to throw in a little recovery Ironman and get my Kona slot and, you know, go home.
Yeah, he had the most insane 8 days. He did April 14th, the Amstel Gold Race bike racing. April 17th, Le Flèche Wallonne. I'm sure I'm saying that terribly. And then on the 21st, Ironman South Africa with a podium and Kona qualification. Like,
crazy. Oof,
that is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And he showed up like 2 days before the race. Like he barely got there in time to get to registration, check in, and then he was leading. I mean, he was leading at a point in the run and got, and then finally got past and held on to third.
Yeah, nothing can stop Cam. Amazing, amazing performance by Cam Worth. And on the girl side, we had from Spain Marta Sanchez taking the win. And then from the Netherlands, Didi Diedrichs. And from Germany, Laura Zimmermann. It's good to see her, you know, with a strong, strong performance. And the winner was 9 hours, 15 minutes. Again, this just shows how tough the conditions were in South Africa. And, you know, when conditions are tough on an Ironman race, I mean, Jenna, you've done a couple of tough Ironman races. It just means that much, even though the time is slower. You have to earn every single step of the way.
Absolutely.
I mean, look at the day Daniela Reif had. I mean, one of her worst performances in an Ironman in a long time.
Yep.
You know, it seems like she's just living life and having some fun these days and kind of that retirement tour going around. And, you know, it's got to be nice to have a little bit more balance. But I wonder if it's hard mentally, kind of, you know, you're the best in the world for so long, you're coming out to a race now. I wonder what kind of headspace she's in, like just enjoy these last few races, or this sucks not winning.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it definitely sounded like she'd been battling a glute injury is what I think I read that she posted about. And she had to validate her knee spot. So, and I think that was kind of mission number one when she knew she wasn't in form, and she got that accomplished, which was kind of what got her to the finish line. I think, like, I got to finish this race and validate.
Yeah.
And she did that. And that was probably goal number one. And now she's already talking about, can I get fit for Nice? And that's now her next priority, and stay healthy and be fit for that. So I think you're right. I think at the same time, she wants to go on this tour and say goodbye to everything. But what I hope misses that song that we thought it was going to be for Young last year.
Yeah, hopefully.
How good would that be? She's just inspired so many people and really brought the women's racing up to a new level. So it'd be very cool to see her have a great day in Nice.
Yeah, that would be incredible to see. And hopefully she's healthy. And well, we know Daniela, and when she prepares for an event and she's fit and ready, you can't count her out. Like she's going to be, I think she's going to be ready when Nice comes to show us what she can do in that course.
Love to see it.
Mm-hmm. Another race that happened over the weekend, which I'm very curious because the times were a little shady on the run, was 70.3 Valencia. And we have an undefeated 70.3 athlete, Leo Verger from France, taking the win. In second place, we had from Germany, Jan Stratmann. And on third place, another German, Yannick Schöffler. Yannick Schöffler. But their run course seemed to me a little short because there were a lot, and I'm saying a lot of athletes who ran 110, 109, 111. So yeah, I don't think if you finish 25th place on the pros and you run a 110, that the course is set right.
You mean 25th place and all those men aren't running like best ever times, like Brownie, yeah. Padino, and Gomez battling each other out?
Exactly. Yeah. 110, like from first place to sixth place, everybody was 19, 110. And then, we have, let's see, 20th place run a 18, 108. 40th place run a 110. So, yeah, maybe it was like a K and a half short or something. Yeah.
Man, but yeah. Berger, though, he's just so good over the 70.3 distance. Like, he just gets it done.
Yeah, just a class act. And on the girl side, we had from Denmark, the Danish, all the Scandinavians are showing a very strong first half of the year fitness. Laura Madsen took the win in 409. Then Lina Melfer from Germany, and then another German, Caroline Pohl, rounding up the podium in Valencia. Laura Philipp came fourth, which was, it was a bit surprising because Laura, she's usually right there. But then again, Philipp, her partner and coach, is usually very meticulous with preparations and everything. So maybe Laura is taking a slower build for the year, and this is just like a tune-up race for something greater, because that's the way these guys work. And it wouldn't surprise me if we see her in a couple of 70.3s later in the year and she's winning all of those.
And she ran 2 or 3 minutes faster than the three. So, I mean, she was moving towards that top three on the run, so I think she ran out of time.
Absolutely,
yeah,
absolutely.
She's on the Olympic series, so she's going to be battling some of the big names very, very soon. Be curious to see what kind of form she is in the next Team 100 race. Not a ton of time.
No. She ran a 1:19. There were only two female athletes who broke the 80-minute barrier, and Laura was one of those. A lot of racing this weekend. We had 70.3 Philippines. And this race, hot, humid, very, this was the sort of races that Crowe used to go when he was getting ready for Kona and, early in the season. And we have former Olympic bronze medalist Henry Schumann taking the win. And it's for the listeners, when you look at races, the run times are the first indicator of a tough and humid and hot race, because Henry is a sub 30-minute 10K runner off of the bike, and he could probably easily run a 115, 116 half, and he ran a 124, and he won with a 124. So, yeah, just tough conditions.
Yeah,
and by a lot too. I mean, some of those guys were running 126s, 127s. I mean, it must have been brutal.
136, 132, yeah. 133, 130. Yeah. Yeah. 127. So,
but
so
then you look at our women's winner and she wasn't far behind.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I know that was the cool thing in that one. It wasn't far off.
Yeah. It was incredible. Second place, Sam Osborne. And then third place, we had Tom Bishop from the Great Britain in the Philippines. And on the girls' side, also, you know, a very tough race, but, you know, one girl that has been on fire, like, for the past, you know, 15 months or so, Else Visser from the Netherlands took the win. You know, she's a very strong biker, and now the run is coming together. So she's going to be a very interesting athlete to watch for the next coming months. On second place, we had Anne Reichmann from Germany, and on third place we had Zanet Brackmeyer from Hungary, I believe, coming in third.
Netherlands,
also Netherlands. Oh, okay, on third place. But yeah, this race never disappoints. It's very hot, it's very humid, it's very Kona like but maybe I reckon it's a bit hotter than Kona and more humid, but because I saw some videos and photos, and the athletes looked like they were suffering a lot. But yeah, just grabbing ice, putting sponges everywhere, dumping water everywhere. It was just like a survival race. Now we fly to the southern hemisphere, to Peru. We had 70.3 Lima, with a lot of Mona apparel athletes racing on the pro field, which was very cool to see. We had our own Lucho Tacone. We have the Chilean Martin Baeza. We had a couple of other, you know, age groupers rocking the Mona tricets. And we had from Brazil, Reinaldo Colucci taking the win. Then Lucho Tacone from our own Mona team. And then from Mona also, Federico Scarabino from Uruguay taking the third position. So it was very cool to see. And it just goes to show how, you know, incredibly fast the new suit is, and you know, just a class act from these guys.
Yeah, there was
it sounded like a really cool race too, because there was like 7, 8, 9 of them coming together off the bike that were all running together too at the beginning of that half marathon. I mean, crazy.
Yeah, 112, 111. Yeah, very fast conditions for the run for sure.
That is wicked. Always makes it more fun to watch those kind of battles go down. I wish we had more of those in triathlon, and that's what I was kind of hoping for at the T100, to see more of those where you have a group of like 5, 6
yeah.
off the bike and just battle it out.
Yeah, that would be amazing. And now to finish all the racing that happened over the weekend, on the girl side, we have the Mexican Cecilia Perez taking the win, which was very cool to see. On second place from Chile, we had Sofia Balmaceda on second place, and on third place from Argentina, Romina Palacio, who I believe was coached by Lucho Tacone for quite a bit of time. So yeah, that was the girl side, and yeah, very very hectic weekend of racing. So now we are on the full swing of things. Just racing after racing is going to get exciting from now on.
Full gas into the racing. Love to see it, and there's definitely lots of good races there. So looking forward to following a lot of that between the T100 series, the Ironman Pro series. We got WTCS, we got the Olympics coming up. This year we are going to be spoiled, and it is definitely starting to kick off. Oceanside is always kind of that season opener.
Yeah, it's going to be jam-packed from now on, and we got a big boy coming up this weekend with Texas, yeah. And we got a lot of our teammates that are down there, and a lot of pros gearing up for this big first Ironman Pro Series full distance race.
Absolutely. But before we get into predictions and talking all about Texas, let's dive into the fun stuff. Josh, what do you got for social media post of the week?
I tried to change it up a little bit this week. We've kind of done a lot of the mainstream media and things like that. And one of my buddies from Oceanside, who's a New England girl and a real tri-squad, who went out to Oceanside and actually couldn't race, Nicole Falcaro, because she got stung by a stingray. She had a pretty funny post, and she's actually a pretty hilarious social media follow if you haven't followed her, but MMF005, and she had a post, because she has been injured, asking the things that she's forgot to do when she is injured. And number one is change her socks. Number two is shave. Number three is shower. Number four is drink water. And number five is put on chamois cream. And then she goes on to have some amazing hashtags. And those are always pretty funny. But she did say, yes, number five is a joke. She didn't have to put on chamois cream while she was injured. But a good follow for everyone in triathlon. She is pretty funny and just a nice little dry humor coming out of her. So we'll post that for people to check out and wish her the best in her recovery from Mr. Stingray.
Yeah, that always sucks, especially dealing with injury. You know what? At least she's going at it with a positive attitude and just having some fun with it. We always like to see that. Nice to have a new account to follow to keep it entertaining and lighthearted, regardless of the unfortunate situation.
Yeah, apparently she got home and was back for a few days and started feeling better, and it just flared up again and had to get on antibiotics and like crazy. So careful when you're swim practice and doing your run entries into the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Well, when it comes to What BF this week, I had a hard time choosing. There may be a special mention in that, but I think the one that we have to go to that is going to be a bit of a buzz within the triathlon world is T100 not doing their own testing for doping with athletes. So one of our fellow podcasts, although they're, well, a lot bigger than us, but Pro Tri News, they are on there talking about some of the things going on in the industry around pro racing. And they put out something that ended up being more controversial than I would have assumed it would be. Is they put out which T100 athletes are currently on RTP. So what RTP is, the registered testing pool. These are the athletes that have to put in their daily location so that they could be tested out of competition at any time. If you're not in that pool, then you're only being tested if you have a good result at a race, and some races like the T100 will do a blood spot test before the event. Now, if you're dumb enough to be doping event day, then well, you deserve to be caught, but nobody's getting caught that way. Like they're smarter than that. So the only way we're really seeing athletes get caught is without a competition testing. So that's why it was disappointing to see that the T100 series, which had talked about it before, still doesn't have any testing lined up for their athletes. Now, a number of the athletes are being tested through other federations, like Ironman. We'll give them praise there, have actually invested a fair bit of money to test athletes within the Ironman races, and then you have the Olympic distance and national federations are testing their own athletes. But what that means is we have a few athletes that kind of fall in between the two. Either they haven't had good Ironman results in a while, or they've signed on to the T100 series, so Ironman kind of dropped them out of their pool, so they're not being tested at all. What was kind of what the F was that people weren't happy that they posted which athletes were being tested and which athletes were. So what do you think, Josh, about kind of the uproar over athletes, well, putting it out there, which athletes are not being tested?
I think my initial reaction is WTF. I can't believe how many of them are not on any list whatsoever. Yeah. But then you start to think about it more when you start to see some comments from Haley Chura and Holly Lawrence and the fact that it sounds like Pro Tri, Kyle, whoever reached out to them, Talbot reached out to them, but maybe they didn't get an answer from them. And it was kind of just a mum's the word. And they went ahead and posted what they did. But now this information is public, and there is ways to find out who's on this, who's on the list and whatnot. So whether or not an athlete responded or not is not really necessary, but it could help because not all that information is up to date either. So I think it was just a matter of the way they posted it without the disclaimers and being upfront with all of the information and how they gathered it, I think is where the uproar and the backlash came from. But it's also interesting to see some of the names that are on that list and others who have chimed in and said, oh, I've been removed from testing. And I was on it for a few years, but now I've been removed. And as we discussed last week with Yuri, not on a list. It's hard for me to know because I haven't done the research and done the Googling and all of this to find out who is in on these lists. But some of the responses in the comments have been pretty eye-opening, and it certainly got a lot of people chatting and talking. And I think that's the number one goal here, is to get this out in front and make people react. And hopefully the people in charge of it all will actually do what they're supposed to do and start testing and make the sport a little bit more. It's just got to be fair across the board, and everything's got to be done the same way. World triathlon needs to step up is really what it comes down to, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, PTO had talked about how testing was going to be something they implemented before the series really kicked off. They talked about it last year, and we just haven't seen it come to fruition. And especially something that's supposed to be based around like an athlete's organization. These athletes want testing. They want it to be out there because they want to know that they're racing against clean athletes. And I think that's what really helps our sport stay clean, is knowing that they're being tested regularly, knowing they have the support of the athletes, and they don't feel as much pressure to dope because they believe their competitors are not. Now, as we saw with cycling, that's not always true in there anyways, but I think a lot more clarity around that, a lot more testing, and just making sure that they're on top of it is a preventative measure. Because if you get to that point of desperation, like Colin Chartier, who said, like, I believed they were all doing things like this, so I believed that was the only way that I could compete or be on the same level, that's where it gets into a very bad place, like cycling spiraled down, where it was like, well, all my competitors are doing it, so I need to do it, which is not a good place to be. It doesn't send a good message to the next generation, too. So we don't want to see that start and become a culture, like a thing of culture within triathlon. So hopefully they'll get that sorted out.
I think we all know Pro Tri News has a lot of pull, has a lot of listeners, has a lot of followers. And they definitely are way more than a clickbait news channel. And they're all fans and all athletes that are tied to the sport and have made a living off of it. So I think this is something that hopefully it does do the trick, but I think we all know it's going to take time for any big changes to be implemented. The one thing with that post that I did see was their communication with the T100 and what the PTO was saying they were about to release and about to talk about. And this was, we're going back to last year at the US Open. And now we're coming up on almost a year from that conversation and nothing's been done. So that's an interesting piece to the whole news article that I saw that I thought was, okay, well, how does this change? What is the tipping point? And these investigations take forever when somebody is like under allegation, and who knows how long it would take to find out if any one of these athletes had tested positive. I have no idea. It's unfortunate that we're talking about it again. I mean, every time we talk about this, it's like, let's hope we're not talking about this again in another few weeks.
Well, it's so funny. I remember listening to the podcast where they were kind of talking about that initially, and I was running around Las Vegas with LATAP Las Vegas. So it was like May last year. So not a lot of progress has been made since then. And that's kind of disappointing to see, especially as there's more money, more eyes on the sport, more attention. That's a lot more incentive for people to do sketchy things and have sketchy affiliations. And it just, you know, how much would it suck if we see this T100 series, see some of these athletes be popped for doping kind of thing? It's just, it would be really disappointing to see that after the fact. So the quicker they can get something in place, and especially with the affiliation, like you said, with World Triathlon, like, why aren't they a part of their testing pool if they have this partnership in there? I know it all comes down to money at the end of the day, but I think that is something worthy of allocating funds to make sure that our sport, you know, stays fair, stays clean, especially as there's more incentive.
Yeah. I mean, they're now on the cusp of making a living with or without sponsorships. And that has never been the case. So that changes the ballgame. And we've seen it in the past with other sports, as you mentioned, in cycling especially. And the biggest thing here to me is it's got to be a standard across the board. And I saw some comments and others talk about, hey, if somebody's being coached by somebody who's been red flagged before, we need to make sure they're part of the test. No, everyone has to be in it. That's the way you've got to have everyone in it. Everyone's got to be in it. And it's not just pick and choose. Like the fact that there are some athletes that aren't in it is mind-boggling to me.
No, definitely. Well, the other special mention for What the F, we kind of talked about this before as the rumors were flying around, but it would be Ironman's new nutrition sponsor. This one definitely feels like a bit of a money grab. They're switching from Gatorade to Mortal Hydration. Now, usually, you know, the hydration nutrition sponsors change, but this one has way less carbs and uses stevia for sweetness, which generally in Ironman, you want easy to digest things and all the carbs. So it doesn't seem like this is going to be a great option. So all I have to say to athletes is test this out beforehand. Stevia especially is not a great thing to take massive quantities of for gut happiness, we'll say. Oh, I can't imagine a newbie coming into it and just using on-course nutrition. That is not going to be pretty.
And it's interesting, too, because it is on the bike, it is going to be pre-mixed. There is no bottle solution that the company is making. So you're leaving it up to somebody else, a volunteer, whoever, to mix this. Which, okay, on the run course, that's the way it's been with Gatorade Endurance and things like that. But on the bike, if you're relying on on-course nutrition and or you lose a bottle and you need a bottle, you're not grabbing a Gatorade Endurance bottle that was made at a manufacturing facility and you know exactly what you're getting. These are going to be mixed. They're going to be handed out to you in bottles, thankfully. I actually did use it on my bike ride this weekend. I'm going to grab it on the run course at some point, and I'd rather have it. And on the bike, I can handle it, but I need carbs, and it's going to be, for me, it's probably going to change to be more gels on the bike, and I'll get the other bottles filled with liquid carbs. I do sweat a lot, as we've talked in the past, and I have got a high salt concentration. So for me, I will probably use it on the run as long as I can continue to handle it. But for others, absolutely. I mean, if you can't take as many gels as I can take, you're in trouble, and you need to find something else that isn't Gatorade that you can get your carb source in if you plan on sending your run and going for a good half marathon. So it starts on the bike. It is a, like you said, it is a strange partnership. It seems to be one-sided why this happened. And I'm sure the founders are great people and have a great idea in mind, and she created it for, I believe she was diabetic and wanted something that she could have, and for that, that's great, but not everyone in the sport is diabetic, and not everyone, most people need carbs, unless you're Dan Plus.
There we go. Just work on that fat burning capacity and it won't be any issue on you. Yeah, it definitely just seems like a strange one there. But the sweeteners like stevia, that's the one that really gets me. If you are going to use it, very much test it out with some long bike rides and then running off the bike to see how your stomach feels in there, because that could get a little sketchy there. But I love the idea behind it and the thought process behind it, that they're trying to make more options for people who are resistant to carbs or do have issues with them. It's just, for the general public, probably not the best. But if you do try it out, or if you try it at the races, let us know. We'd love to hear your thoughts on it. And you know what? Maybe we're all wrong and the stevia won't upset your stomach at all. So give it a try and get back to us there.
I mean, the good thing too there is everyone's going to have an opportunity to still get their Gatorade Endurance in for the rest of this month and the rest of May, and I believe most of June. So if you're doing Texas this weekend, you're good. You're still going to have Gatorade as an option. It's not until the beginning of July where Gatorade is going to be removed completely.
Awesome. That is definitely good to hear, because I know a lot of people have been planning to use it on course. That would be not fun to have that switch up right away. But speaking of Texas, there is the first Ironman of the Ironman Pro Series on this weekend. And like we talked about before, this race list is stacked. It got so full so fast to the point where they had to shut down registration early, and a couple of big names like Alistair Brownlee were left off the list because they could not get a start. So, and that's one thing. There was actually, Alistair was on the, I think the Brazil start list, but didn't end up starting there. So sounds like still things going on with his injury that we saw at the T100. But let's jump into who's actually racing or on the start list. Start with the women. We got previous winner Kat Matthews, Jocelyn McCulley, Maya Stage Nelson, Fenella Langridge, Alice Alberts, Laura Brandon, Danielle Lewis, Lottie Wilms, Anna Berry, Rebecca Clark, and it goes on and on. So definitely a solid start list there. This race is, if you haven't seen it before, it's going to be hot and humid with a very flat bike course up and down a highway that sometimes flat and fast is harder on the body because there's just no change in position or breakup or anything whatsoever. So it'll be fun to see the women battling out. I'm just curious to see how Kat Matthews goes after her calf tear at a T100 in Miami. What do you think, Josh? What's this race going to look like?
And the other factor with the highway and the out and back is you're going to get a lot of age groupers involved in this as well. Yep. On the bike course and on the run course. It gets pretty congested at times. So hopefully we don't have any incidents the pros get to do their thing without any issues there. And we do know in the women's field that sometimes becomes a factor on the bike too, and even in the men's field. So I it seems like Kat's almost all systems go from what you're hearing and what you're seeing her put out there. And she's excited. Yeah. It's cool to see her get to the start line, and it doesn't sound like she did anything extravagant in terms of recovery, just kind of let it do its thing and got back at it. How much run fitness she's going to have is going to be interesting. It's almost similar to where Jocelyn McCulley was last year coming into this race, coming off of her ankle injury. And I still think she's coming back. I mean, every time you see her run, it's like her and Lionel have that natural limp gait now. So this is a good race for Jocelyn McCulley, right?
Absolutely. And with Kat Matthews, you know what? She's just so, like, she's such a strong runner that even off of not a ton of run fitness, she's still going to be competitive, which is what makes this interesting for sure. Got to see if she'll...
The calf injury is interesting with the bike too, though. So, I mean, how much has she been able to push a bike? And 112 is a lot different than the T100, and that's all she's done so far this year. So, it's Kat Matthews, and she's phenomenal at what she does. So I wouldn't rule her out. This is Alice Albert's first race of the season. So that's another one who we've talked to recently, and I've followed pretty extensively. She's had a great last, three, four races with results in two of them. So she's kind of owned the Ironman distance over the last 12 months. So I think she'll be up there. We all know Fenella's ready to go coming out of Oceanside and a good performance there. So, man, it's wide open. Danielle Lewis, Lauren Brandon, I mean, it is a pretty packed field.
Danielle has just been going up and up and up too. Like, she really could shake this up as well.
And Rebecca Clark, what can Rebecca Clark do in the swim? I mean, and get away like she proved in Singapore. She's got her swim form too. So,
no, I think this is going to be a wicked race. I'm so excited to see it go down, and we'll actually broadcast it, which is nice. I've heard that it's on YouTube and outside. So if it's on YouTube, go that way, because there's slightly less advertisement without having the outside and the Ironman advertisement. No, okay, watching that T100 in Singapore, I realized how annoying the constant advertisements are on the Ironman racing, because you didn't have any on the T100. Morton moves or like seeing Lucy in the Roka goggles every 5 minutes kind of thing. It was refreshing to not miss moments in the race because there was another commercial break and Didi, we'll be right back every 10 minutes. Less than 10. Anyway, sorry. total side note in there, but
it's okay. I didn't have to go through that torture. I was just doing it to myself while racing when you were watching that one.
Right.
So I have to deal with this torture for a full distance race this time.
Mm-hmm. See it all in there. How many times will we hear Didi? And yeah, it just, it's a lot. Anyways.
So who do you think's going to take it, Jenna? Because I've had the first go a couple times now.
Okay. You know what? I got to go after doing some of the testing with Fenella Langridge and seeing her down in the woodlands. She knows this area. She's been down there. She's done some training there and dialed in with the fastest race kid out there with Mana Apparel, if I do say so. But no, you know what? She is just such a gritty, strong racer, and the Ironman distance suits her a lot more than 70.3. So I think Fenella is going to take this one. How about you, Josh? Who do you got?
I love the pick, and for more than just the Mana reasons. She's been there probably the longest. She's been there pretty much since Oceanside. She went right there a couple days after Oceanside and has been down there acclimating. She's a great account to follow if you don't already. So she's ready to go for sure. I really do like Alice and everything she's done, but I'm going to go with Kat. I think she's gonna pull it off. And if she's starting, she's not risking her T100 contract. And that's the biggest thing to me. Like, if she's gonna actually go and start this race, it's not to validate. She's going to win. And I think that's a big factor for me. But there's so many females that could pull this off, but I'll go with Kat.
And you know what's interesting here too is there's like six Kona spots, or I guess Nice for the women, Nice spots for this. And a bunch of them already have their qualification for it. So like you could be
locked down,
have their qualification. So it could go to like 9th, 10th place and still get that qualification, which is even more interesting on the men's side, because I think like 6 or 7 of them have their Kona qualifications. So that could go to like 12th place, get a Kona spot. So it'll definitely, what that means for this race is one Ironman Pro Series points are on the line. So people are going to push to the very last minute because you get points based on how far you are behind the winner, which we saw destroy a few people at Oceanside on the women's side. That result almost doesn't count because the points were so much lower. So we're definitely going to see some battles for minor placing and then those Ironman points as well, because this one's going to count for a lot. Oh, excited to watch it. Well,
for sure.
Let's jump on to the men's side. We got a few familiar names here too. We've got Patrick Lange, Robert Wilkuecki, Brandon Currie, Matthew Marquardt, Matt Hansen, Joe Skipper, Noah Kulhas, Clement Mignon, Trevor Foley, Chris Leifman, Dylan Magnian, Jonas Hoffman, and a number of others. And we got Jason Pohl as well. We always got to give him a shout out as one, a Calgarian and a Mana athlete. So we got to cheer him on. Yes, we definitely have a few names on here. I think this is going to be so interesting to see how this goes down. There's a mix of like fast runners and really strong bikers that are going to be a little bit out of the water. So that's always fun, especially with a flat and fast course like this. It seems like the strong bikers can make up a lot of time.
Sure.
Anything else actually go down?
Yeah, I mean, again, when you get to the marathon distance run and you've got some runners like Matt Hansen and Patrick Lange, if they're there, how do you root against them? Now, this is kind of the race that put Matthew Marquardt on the map last year too. So if I remember correctly, it was Texas that everyone's like, whoa, where'd this guy come from? And Rudy's not back to defend. So who does take this one? Patrick's been down there since Oceanside training.
Early season form didn't look great. And to be fair, he hasn't raced a ton of 70.3s, and that's not his distance. And Texas, between the shoes and the way he runs, he could go run sub 230, and I wouldn't be surprised at all. But how much time will he lose on the bike is the question.
Yeah. So, you know what? And I know he's still juggling his entire life and grad school and everything else he's got going on with Matthew Marquardt, all of his research work that he's doing. We haven't seen him race, I don't believe, yet this year. But I will go with him because he's familiar with the course. He knows what he didn't do last year and what he can do this year. So I'm going to go with Marquardt.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, see, I was looking, I've been going back and forth because, you know, a Patrick Lange who's fit and running can have that insane run time. But we just saw Joe Skipper have a solid 70.3 time for him. Now he's not winning, but he's never been incredibly good at that 70.3 race. But then he shows up at Ironman's and absolutely crushes it. I wonder if he'll have his aero bottle set up with like the two aero bottles on either side where he can't see. So if he can see and knows where he's going, that'll be one thing in there.
And he's been staying up his feet with his motorized scooter in the grocery store.
That's definitely entertaining to watch as well. Oh man, you know what? I'm gonna go. Keep going back and forth. I'm gonna go Patrick Lange. I think get it dialed in after Oceanside, and that run is just a killer run. If he's fit, I think he'll take this one.
It's such a cool run too, along the water there, and you've got all the fans right there and the tree cover, so that it can, even in the heat, it can get, you can get some areas of some reprieve and people spraying water on you and things like that. So. You can't rule against Patrick in a full distance Ironman.
He's just so good running in the heat. Like, it's unreal. Man, but you know what? I hope more than anything we have like a crazy mix-up where something unsuspected happens to keep it interesting.
Always.
I will definitely be watching this weekend, and maybe we'll get to see one of those battles where we have a big group coming out off the bike and it'll be a battle to the finish. I think in the women's race, it has a bit more potential to happen. Everyone kind of has their strengths, there's the potential for a lot of lead changes in that one for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things we've got coming up too is I just noticed that the podcast is coming up on its 1 year anniversary, and our 50th episode are all around the same time. So that magic might happen together, but it'd be awesome to hear from our listeners on who you want us to try and get as a special guest for either episode 50 or the 1 year. So please send those in. There's a poll right now on social media if you want to nominate somebody for us to try and go communicate with and secure for our big episodes coming up.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I didn't even realize that until you posted it up. That's insane how, yeah, time flies. It's coming up fast here. Oh my goodness.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What a year. Do you even remember filming that or recording that trailer?
Oh, man. Yeah. I didn't quite know what to expect or what this would turn into. But, you know, it's fun to get it started. And Josh, you've been an amazing addition to it as well. And I think we found the right team in here. And we may have someone else joining us soon. So stay tuned for that. A very experienced podcaster. And we'll leave it at that for now. But let us know if there's someone you want us to try to get on, and we will do our best, to have a chat with them and celebrate 50. That's crazy.
Amazing.
Well, as always, thank you for joining me, Josh, and Fede had to jump off here, but we will be back next week to break down what happened in Texas and have some more fun just geeking out on triathlon and doing what we do here.
Have a good night, everyone. Have a great night.